Good morning, boys and girls, cowboys and Indians, Republicans and Democrats. We're live from Colorado Springs, Colorado. We're going to talk about the hemp industry in America this morning. I'm Reed Mason. My partner here is Bill Fitzgerald and Kirk Rogozin.
Rogozin.
Never can get it right.
It's only been 7-8 years.
Yeah, never can get it right. Bill? Where should we get started this morning?
Well, let's get into it. Everyone knows about the new USDA regulations. They're basically gonna write regulations for states that don't have departments of agriculture regulating the particular state they're in. So if you're in a state that isn't regulated, you'll have to follow the USDA rules and get USDA licensing. And that should pretty much set the standard for the whole country. I would expect all the state's Department of Agriculture to get in line behind the new regulations. And they're really not that different from anything we've been expecting or lived under for the last couple years, wouldn't you say, Kirk?
Right. It's the same that we've always held under the 0.3 THC level, total THC, where, you know, if you're from a state that's had a little bit different outlook on that, some people have gone Delta 9 instead of total THC. As Bill said, the USDA is just a blanket for the country. It's not changed. It's just clarifying is really all it's trying to do. So, you know, some of these states might have this year to kind of filter through that and get their Department of Agriculture, their inspectors out. You know, it's a process. Even here in Colorado, where we are basically the standard, we've been doing it for years. And with such immense growth and changes, our Department of Agriculture probably only got to 75% of the farmer last year. So I can only imagine in these new states, it's a lot of changes going on.
Yeah, Reed, what are some of the new states coming online this year for their first year really doing the hemp program?
We have quite a few of them: Texas, Louisiana, Ohio, Missouri, Florida. I think Georgia's talking about it as well, might already be in the process. A lot of these people are going to be receiving their licenses within the next 3 months, hopefully get in on this summer's growing season. We're going to talk a little bit about various other events that are happening in America, auctions, what to do with your product, so forth down the road. But right now we're just going to get into, where do we start? How do we start? Do we apply for a license in each of these individual states? I would say go to your Department of Agriculture, pull off the appropriate forms that you need, and start there. Then start doing your research online, where you're going to get your seeds, where you're going to grow, your conditions, your investors, get your relationships lined up for the beginning and for the end.
Right, and that's obviously, we get that question a lot here at the seed company. People ask us, you know, if we grow out your seeds, well, what's the end product? And again, here in Colorado, we've had that established. It's a little bit easier. Channels are open, processes are in place. So if you are in a new state, you know, look around and also look to other states around you too and see if you can move your product that way. But as far as Reed's saying, it all starts with the right seeds. That's where we come in.
So we went to Nashville to the IHAM convention. It was the first year of it. We had a booth there and met some people. It was fairly attended, lightly, I would say. There was hemp auction. We saw a lot of different things on the hemp auction floor, didn't we, Kirk?
We did, and it goes back to what we were saying earlier, that even though in certain states, as in Tennessee, if they're going off the Delta 9, that's great, but then when they go to sell these bulk products, the processors are looking at it as that's basically over the legal limits of total THC. So what did sell was clean and under 0.3. Which is what we've always preached and go by. You know, that's the standard that we should be across America.
Yeah, until they change the regulation, which hopefully they will, and raise the 0.3.
Amen. Yeah, if they can bring that'll make everybody's life a little better.
And what they didn't sell, they're going to have to store till March, April, when maybe the prices start coming back up. What a lot of people were talking about. But they have to take it back home and store it properly.
Correct. Yeah. Mold and issues like that. You know, if you're talking about such a bulk harvest and you're pulling down 100 to 100,000 pounds, you know, even 10 pounds sitting in a pot for too long will turn to mold. So we don't want that. And you know, guys, do your research, like Reese said. You know, we're here to throw questions at us. We know we put a lot of information on our website to help everybody, but
we could have bought a whole lot for a real good deal, but we didn't know what we were going to do with it or how we were going to get it back home. We are going to have to talk about transporting in America here real quick from state to state. There are some new laws in the works to make that interstate commerce easier for hemp. Law enforcement's having a real hard time distinguishing between the two, which obviously leads to testing, but people are sitting in jail while the testing is going on. All right, the considerations for planting this summer for a hemp crop in America, we're going to go over a little bit of a list of what we need to talk about. We need to talk about our climate. We need to talk about our location, our region, our soils, our water sources, our planting mediums, how we're going to go in and out of the ground, where we're going to start, our climates, our weather patterns, rains, hails, problems that can work against us this summer. First of all, once we have all that in place, then we're going to have to find a seed source. And what makes a good seed, Bill?
Of course, the main thing of any cannabis crop would be the genetics. I mean, I'd say 70% of the value of a certain strain is in its genetics in itself. I mean, what it is, how it presents itself in the field, as far as the end product. What does the bud look like, structure? We grow the seeds to be as big as we can make them to start with, and then we grade them out. I mean, the smaller seeds we take out, as well as anything that won't germinate that you can tell by looking at.
So my germination rate and my end product, and that's going to dictate my price. I'm going to pay for what I get.
Right. Besides the genetics, you could a higher germination rate, you'll pay more for, because for one thing, less labor involved in culling out seedlings that never came out.
And we're talking feminized seeds only. I don't want to work hard in my garden all year for nothing.
Well, if you're paying $1 or $2 per seed, you want to make sure each seed grows and becomes a plant, because that's a lot of money. You're just not going to throw them out in your garden. You're going to take care of each seed individually. So we want to provide the best seed. We guarantee at Cheyenne Mountain Seed Company that you'll have all the plants that you planned for, because we carefully look for a germination rate. We test for our germination rates a few times, try and really get it correct. and then we add more seed to your order based on the germination rate. So if you're getting a 95% germination rate is what we test out, we're going to give you 5% more seed. So you'll, if you're planning on 10,000 plants, you will end up with 10,000 plants at least.
And that's 1,500 an acre. And that gives me room to work around because these plants are going to get wide and thick.
Right. We talk about it on our website, you know, how to figure how many plants you're going to need per acre. And it all depends on the spacing between your plant, of course. The more spacing you provide, the easier it is to work in the field, of course, because weed control is a huge issue.
Hi, guys. So basically, when we're evaluating our hemp strains, what we're looking at in the term strain, number one, that's the difference between not just a cannabis plant, but how that cannabis plant's going to produce. Okay, there's a million types of apples out there. There's a million types of hemp strains out there. So what we want is the biggest, juiciest, tastiest buds, and we want the medicine, the CBD, full photocannabinoids, to be super high, although the THC will remain at 0.3 or less. So in evaluating our hemp strains, that's the goal right there. Biggest producing buds, the highest amount of CBD I can get, and keep it at 0.3 THC. We want to get back to, what am I getting? I'm getting as much bud as I can, as much CBD as I can at 0.3% THC. And as I think we talked a little bit earlier also about germination rates, which is, again, huge. Even if I'm paying, $100 for a few in the backyard, I want to make sure I get my $100 worth. If I'm out there when I want to put 10,000 in the field, I want to make sure I have 10,000 plants. So here at Cheyenne Mountain Seed, we do our testing on the germination rates, and what we do is we go ahead and give you, the farmer or the grower, the extra 5 or 10% or whatever the germination rate falls at. If it's a 95% germination rate, we'll give you the 5%, as I believe Bill mentioned earlier. So again, here we are evaluating hemp strains and hemp seeds. These are the things that I would look for.
What are the differences between the cherry wine and the quick kush and the mountain mango in size, in color, in looks?
Sure, there's a little bit in each. The mango is a very vigorous plant. The cherry wine tends to grow a little bit broader leaf. A lot of people talk about the difference between a sativa or indica, which basically means the plant is more naturally along the equator, or is it in the northern or southern hemispheres where they need broader leaves to absorb the light. Here in North America, our seeds will do better, great in either section, whether you're in Florida or you're in Wisconsin. It's not that much of a difference for the plant to not do well, but as far as size and evaluation of the buds themselves, the mango, big fruity buds, the cherry wine has been an industry standard for years. Very rich in photocannabinoids. It's tends to be a little bit squatter plant, but very thick, heavy buds. This year we have our quick kush, which I'm excited to see it grow. Here in our indoor environment, we've noticed that it'll set to bud very quick.
Way to evaluate hemp strains is by the terpene profile, which is going to be the taste, the fragrance of the bud itself, plus terpenes do contribute to medical values, so which makes each strain different. You can see the terpene profiles of our three strains on our website, but the Quick Kush has a more cushy flavor, obviously. The
Aromatherapy.
The cherry sweet. And the mountain mango has a fruity, mango-y smell and taste, right. Fragrance and taste.
Exactly. That's why they're named that way. And like Bill said, that's from the terpenes. For you guys that don't know where that smell comes from, it's all in that terpene profile. The kush is familiar to a lot of us cannabis growers, kind of a new term for hemp growers. It's an oily bud. It tends to have a little bit of a, almost a gasoline kind of smell, wouldn't you say, Reed?
Yeah, gassy.
Yeah, rich, oily. So, good for what we're growing medicine for. Absolutely.
All right, so Reed and Kirk, I know you've been, you keep telling me the main question that people ask is how many seeds do I plant on an acre? I mean, that is the most basic question to start with. It determines so many things from acreage that you need to work as well as lease, whatever you're going to do, water considerations, on and on. The whole project's based on how many plants you're going to have per acre. So, Kirk, when you want to lay out your hemp field, how do we do it? I mean, we have a thing on our website for it.
Sure. I mean, for an ideal situation, level land, no trees or rocks in the way, you know, go ahead and straight rows of 5-foot centers is what we kind of consider. We like to raise it up a little bit. Clear out your weeds, of course, you know, and all those good things. But as the basic layout for how much of it you can get out of an acre, it depends on your land. If it's, like I said, if it's flat land, we like 1,500 an acre on raised beds, 5-foot centers. If you guys have a hillside, you might need to look at spacing that out or building something around it. If there's too many trees, you know, things like that. But a basic for us, using the 5-foot center method, would be 1,500 acre.
Right. And it's, if you actually do the math on it, it's more like 1,681 plants per acre. But
right, you can go more.
But most people can't plant end to end per acre, so we just round down a little bit. And that's a good number, I think. People like that number.
You know, and then there are questions go concerning, you know, what am I looking at for my field layout? Of course, your whole plan is how much land you have to work with, right, as your business plan. But each, no matter where you are, you're going to have to feed them. These girls get thirsty in the summertime. And if you're in a wet environment, that's great. You know, it could be very helpful. Here in Colorado, we have a very dry environment. So we can tell you that, you know, middle of summer when they're in full bud and it's a hot day, they can drink up to 3 gallons a day, wouldn't you say, Bill?
Easily.
Yeah. So
depending on the size. And, you know, if you're just growing out in a field naked, so to speak, depending on nature to provide your water, that's possible. But like in Colorado, I mean, we can't even think about anything like that.
Right.
Well, we don't suggest a pivot either because you're not getting down into the dirt.
That's a whole nother. The best way to grow, of course, was with plastic mulch, drip irrigation, and that saves water. You can fertilize through the same system. It's the ideal setup. Of course, it costs money. If you do it right, it'll easily pay for itself.
Yeah, easily. The difference between a 1-pound plant and a 5-pound plant, you know, could be huge.
Yeah, so how much, people ask how to figure how much water you need. And it's a critical matter if you're irrigating your hemp. And how you figure it, you have to figure the peak use of your water source, which would probably be in the middle of July, August, beginning of August. The plants are big at that time. They're going into bud. They're still in a veg mode, so they're really going to be drinking some water. Now, depending on your system, you know, more normally you're going to only water 8 hours a day during a normal, maybe 10 hours. Like at peak periods, if your source can handle it, you can just water throughout the day for a longer period to get your gallons per hour up. You know, water 24 hours a day. Of course, it depends on your water source, if you can actually draw that much water out legally or physically or whatever the limitations are of your system. pumps, etc. But we figure 2.5 gallons per day per plant at peak season. That should get you covered anywhere in the country in a hot spell. On a 10-acre plant, 10-acre grow, you're looking at 37,000 gallons a day at least. So it's a lot of water. You got to do your calculations right, or you can, because you don't want to kill your plants when they're to their peak growing season, right, or stun them. They really, really don't like to go without water when they're in bud. You can get away with it when they're in their veg, but once they hit bud, they will die if they right. do not get water.
That's one of the most big things. The consistency of that water, and also, you know, a lot of people pull water out of a well or something that may have a lot of heavy metals in it, or, you know, the pH level could be really off too. Now here we have a controlled environment indoors. How would we, you know, help the farmer get the pH right? Have the retention ponds, or can they treat the water as it goes out?
Well, sure. I mean, it's part of the irrigation system, a pH injector, which has a controller that measures the pH and puts in the right amount of acid, typically, injects it into your system as it goes into the field. You know, you inject as you use the water, you don't, as well as the fertilizer is done at that point, it's not put into some kind of reservoir.
And so there again, that direct line feeding is really the way to go in all this.
Absolutely. You will get the best performance, without a doubt, using irrigation.
Well, perfect. Reed, have you seen any other questions that we...
Well, you know, with the water back to it, it's just like your kids. The more you feed it, the better they'll grow. you've got to keep that water source good and around, and you can't dry up out there. You're going to have problems all summer long. Thanks, everybody, for listening to us today. If you want to find out some more information about everything we do here at Cheyenne Mountain Seed Company, about the cherry wine, the mountain mango, or the quick kush, those are our three main strains. You can find us everywhere. We're on Facebook. Our videos are on YouTube. This podcast will be on our website, which is www.CheyenneMountainSeedCompany.com. And take a look at it. Thanks for listening.